The following podcast is part of the MindBodySpirit.fm podcast network.
Welcome to Truth Transforms. Join in for spiritually enlightening discussion and the practical application of new thought principles. Here's your host, Reverend Galen McDowell.
Welcome to Truth Transforms with Reverend Galen McDowell. I'm your host, Galen McDowell, and I am the Executive Minister, Senior Assistant Minister, and the Director of the Johnny Coleman Institute at Christ Universal Temple. And today I have a very special guest, a friend I've made in the last few years who is doing great work out in the New Thought world, in the Unity world. He's been a guest on this show several times before, and I think this is a great opportunity in 2024 and beyond to have a conversation about the New Thought movement, about Unity, and what our impact could be in the world. Even though I'm not a Unity minister, our theologies are the same. And it's really important for us to have powerful conversations about where we can take this message. So today, my guest is the Reverend Shad Groverland, the CEO of Unity Worldwide Ministries. How are you doing there, Reverend Shad?
I'm doing quite well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited about this conversation because I know that, you know, Unity Worldwide Ministries is doing great work out in the world with the different Unity ministries around the world. You know, I failed to mention to you before the class actually started, and I'm consistently asked to speak at a couple of Unity churches every year. You know, I probably do somewhere along 15 to 16 speaking engagements in Unity churches
all right
a year. So they like me.
Yeah, well, that's good. Well, you got good stuff going on.
All right. So I want to jump into it because I want to obviously honor your time. So, you know, there's a lot of conversation happening right now in the New Thought movement. And, you know, not just in Unity, but we're going to specifically talk about Unity and then the larger New Thought movement. Mm-hmm. But Unity, where do we fit, you know, Christianity and other religions and other different things, and progressive and conservative, and all the stuff that's going on in the nation, and spiritual practices, spirituality versus religion. So, in your opinion, what is unity? That's the first question. What is unity?
Well, for me, it really comes back to our founders. I like to take things back to their root, back to the source of which I discovered them, or which something came out of. And so if we talk about general New Thought, it goes further back than that. But for me, unity starts with Charles and Myrtle Fillmore. Mm-hmm. And it's grown and it's expanded. It's done a lot of things in the decades since, and the 130-ish years since. But for me, the core of that really lies in the work that they did, what they were interested in at the time that this whole thing got started. And that's where it comes from. So for me, I do a lot of reading of what they were thinking about at the time, when this whole thing was growing out of unity, what they were talking about. And they might have called it practical Christianity. They might have called it primitive Christianity. They had a lot of different terms they might have called it. What we see is this growth coming out of the idea that the Bible could have something deeper going on than what we're just reading on the pages. And that's sort of the sprout that began unity expanding that way. And really, if you want to go back further than that, it's the healing of Myrtle, of course. That's the original seed planted in the ground, which grew into her, you know, looking at the Bible, and Charles then joining her and getting this, you know, Bible metaphysics, metaphysical interpretation of the Bible going. And that's kind of where our seed comes from. So when I think about, you know, we've got a lot of different statements, a lot of things different gone today, but that's where it traces back to me, is that source. It's the healing, and then it's the work they were doing in the Bible coming out of that, and everything kind of sprouts from there.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you say a practical Christianity, just reminded me, and I'll get back to the questions really quickly. When I first came to Christ Universal Temple, under the, obviously then in the early 90s, the leadership of the Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman, who, before she became independent and created the Universal Foundation for Better Living, was an ordained Unity minister, a senior minister of a Unity church.
Mm-hmm.
And CUT was a Unity church. It was originally Christ Unity Temple before it was Christ mm-hmm. Universal Temple. And we all love each other. So, you know, sometimes you just have to go do your own thing. So I don't want
anybody absolutely
listening to that and taking it the wrong way. But I remember when I first started taking classes here, one of the things that was emphasized to me was we practice practical Christianity. It was one of the things that Johnny Coleman emphasized so strongly. He would either use practical Christianity or New Thought Christian over and over again. And, you know, Matt, to a certain extent, even when I was training to become a licensed teacher, it was in those classes, it was over and over again, practical Christianity. You will hear that again. You will hear that again. You will hear that again. And the emphasis was we are giving practical applications to the teachings found in the Bible by Jesus and others. Mm-hmm. What is the practical application? What are the principles and laws that could be found in the Bible? And I feel as though it gave me a great foundation for dibbling and dabbling in any brand of new thought or metaphysics or beyond, because the foundation that we studied when we were studying the Fillmores, the H. Emily Cadys, et cetera, the Elizabeth Sand Turners, the Imelda Shanklins, you know, all the classics, that's what we teach here. So, and we still do. So it's important for me to just stop and just emphasize when you said practical Christianity, I can remember one of my teachers making me underline it in the book and then circle it when in Dynamics for Living, when we were studying Charles Fillmore's Dynamics for Living for 15 weeks, it was 15 weeks, just that one class. Anyway, I don't want to get too far away from it, but I just want to let you know just how strongly it was emphasized by one of the giants in the movement.
Yeah, and what we're looking at today and what we're talking a lot about today is, you know, you spent, in those classes, you spent a lot of time defining, discerning, and understanding how that word Christianity shows up in your organization. And so now we recognize each person has a different relationship to that word Christianity.
Yes.
And depending on what school you were in, at what time you were in school, there might have been a different relationship to that word Christianity. And I think the Coleman Theological Seminary probably held pretty firmly to a single definition, a single perspective on the relationship to that word. But we're facing in Unity today, this opportunity is that we have multiple perspectives on that word today. And what does that mean? And so when we say that, we don't want to just throw it out there and say, okay, well, you know, we're Christian today, because that has a different landing for each individual person, depending on where they've come from Unity into Unity and how they were ordained or credentialed or came up through Unity and how their ministry is doing ministry today in the world. So it's been a real eye-opening experience, a real beautiful experience for Unity Worldwide Ministries in the last 6-7 months or so, for us to really dive into understanding how does that show up for us. It's a term our founders used, which they clearly understood at the time they used it. But how does that land for us today, and what does that mean to us today? That's really a fascinating conversation that's unfolded.
Yes, yes. And I think what ends up happening is when you're in Unity or UFBL and some of the other New Thought branches, even the term Christian, you can have resistance on both sides. You can have resistance within your organization for the term.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have resistance by people who use the term and don't accept you as a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Reverend Shedd, I can remember when my grandfather's younger brother made his transition, I went to his funeral. It was a church maybe about 20 minutes from Christ Universal Temple. I show up, I walk in. They thought I was a part of the service. You know, I'm suited up. And, and so the deacons and the ministers were there. It was a Baptist church. And this is the early 2000s. And I'll never forget this, what happened. I walked in. They said, are you a minister? I said, yes. Are you helping with the service? No. What church are you associated with, or what church do you work at? Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm a minister at Christ Universal Temple. And they looked at each other, and they looked back at me, and they said, Johnny Coleman? I said, yes. And they turned their backs to me, and they stopped talking to me. It was like, okay, you know, Christian brotherhood just went out the window here. But
again, which goes really back to how you define that word.
Yeah.
Because it's very different in different circles, even within Christianity, how they relate to that word, and then how they view other people outside of that circle who might be using that word. So it's a fascinating time. And then you have the modern world where there's a lot of associating that word with nationalism or with extremism or these different avenues of it. And so I'm discovering in a big way, if you're going to talk about Christianity, you're going to use the word Christian or Christianity in any context, you're going to have a conversation first. If you want to have a fruitful conversation, you have to precede it with, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about evangelical Christianity? Are we talking about fundamental Christianity? Are we talking about new thought Christianity? Are we talking about practical Christianity? Yeah. And even practical Christianity isn't a term specific to the Fillmores. You know, there's organizations using the term practical Christianity today for living a Christian life in a practical way out of a fundamental Christian church or whatever it might be.
Yes, yes. Interesting. So in the context of that conversation, how does unity fit in the larger world of religion and spirituality?
I think when I think about how do we fit, there's two ways of looking at it. How do we blend in and how do we stand out? And so if you're looking at wanting to merge into a group, and you say, if we want to merge into the spectrum of religion and faith that's out there, then we have this universal message that can pull from many different directions, and we can sort of rub elbows with just about any faith and say, well, yeah, we can talk a little bit about Buddha. We have some relationship to the oneness of Buddhism, and we can talk a little bit about Christianity because we got these deep roots in Christianity with our, again, how you define Christianity. With the Fillmores and the practical Christianity and their approach, and then new thought. We've got a ton of new thought. We're all new thought and a lot of Eastern influence in unity. So in that way, we can merge into this broader space of religion and faith and whatever you want to call it. But how do we stand out? I think is also, that's more probably in line with what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
How do we stand out? Because you can blend in, but you can also disappear. And when people are looking for something specific, they're looking for what stands out in my experience. And so how do we stand out in the world for those people that are looking for what we have to offer? Well, we're unique in many ways in our perspective of the Bible.
Yes.
Yeah. And how we approach the Bible. It's like we do it. And at the depth of which we do it with the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary and all the Sam Turner work and all the work that's out there around this process of really diving into the Bible with a different perspective and then being able to look at it with an Eastern influence like we have and with, you know, an openness to Buddhism, Sifuism, all these other things, be able to look at that. That's something different in the world. And it doesn't dictate who you are, but it helps you stand up to say, well, we've got this, and it's something very special that you may not have heard of. And that's also a great entry point for people into unity, depending on where they are in the process. Because you sort of have a few different camps of people that come into unity. Those that are exiting a Christian church of some sort, more from that direction, and they might have an affinity for what they find that looks church-like in unity. And then you have those that either didn't want to have anything religion or had no relationship to any religion growing up, and they're more into the universalist side of spirituality, and they might find that in a spiritual center or a unity church, and that's how they come in. So you have sort of these two different perspectives there, but what do we really stand on for what helps us be seen in the world? So we're no longer just the best kept secret. What is it we stand on that creates that beacon of light to help people find us that makes us unique? I think in many ways that uniqueness comes back to the Bible metaphysical interpretation that we do and all that sprouts from that and Myrtle's healing and the mind healing that we come from, sprinkled with all these other wonderful things that we can include in the process.
Well, you know, what's interesting, I've spoken, and I'm not going to say where, because it
would be it.
where I've spoken in places and in new thought circles, and I've been told very directly not to emphasize biblical scriptures. I've been told to not use terms like God and prayer, like use the metaphysical alternatives, divine mind or universal law or the ever-present, the universe, which I have no problem using any of the terms. I speak as a certain kind of way, and I believe in defining terms before I use them. So when I say prayer, I mean that, Mm-hmm. When I say, I mean, die. When I say Christ, I mean, die. I do that, but I know that this is happening in our movement where even speakers are being told as they come in, these are the parameters, because our people don't like that, all of that stuff. They want more, I don't want to say generic in a negative sense, because that would be an insult. What I mean by generic, I mean where it doesn't sound like specifically something, because this is where they are and this is where their people are. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and for a person like me, I'm like, well, I'm going to talk like I talk. And if that doesn't work, don't bring me, because I'm not going to change up who I am. You have the right to be authentically who you are. And mm-hmm. I can talk about New Thought without ever bringing up a scripture or using religious terms. It's not because of the limitation. I just believe in the freedom of being able to be authentically me as I honor somebody else being authentically them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the term that's helped me, at least in my own mind, you know, talk about what you're talking about, is it's universalist. So they
right.
a more universalist, universal language, more universal approach mm-hmm. to the presentation and doing that. So for you, when that happens, what do you think? Do you think that's coming from what the congregation wants, or do you think that's coming from what the leadership wants? Where does that request really, you think, it comes from?
I think it's the leadership primarily. The reason why I say I think it's the leadership is because obviously they're getting feedback that I'm not getting
mm-hmm,
from
sure.
the congregation. So obviously I'm not walking into a full contact. That's one. The second thing would be, I think some of the people are a part of, as Bishop John Shelby Spong used to say, the Church Alumni Association. So hearing some of the religious terminology that some of us might use might be harmful for them. What the opportunity I try to let these leaders, the perspective and opportunity I try to present to the leaders is, let me give them the opportunity of looking at what used to harm them potentially as something that can help them.
Mm-hmm.
And I have the skill to be able to do that. And I realize everybody doesn't. They haven't developed that skill. But that is a skill in and of itself. But I've been teaching New Thought for almost 30 years. So it's, you know, at a high level with a high demand.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I do think a lot of it comes from the leadership being afraid to offend. Now, and I think it depends on the space. Now, some places and spaces are, they're in areas where the Bible, the people that come to that church have been people who have been abused by the Bible.
Sure.
People from the LGBTQ community, some people who are, maybe had negative effects going to Catholic school growing up. I don't know, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So because of that, what ends up happening is they're sensitive about how they use the language.
Mm-hmm.
What my concern, and this is just, it just might be my concern, is that if a person doesn't know that they're hearing New Thought, then they don't know that there's a thing that believes what they believe. It's a thing. It's not just us talking in general.
Right.
It's a whole thing.
Right.
And when we understand it, it's a whole movement that promotes the beliefs or many of the beliefs that you already carry and answers a lot of the questions you had when you were in your previous religious experiences, then I think that gives us an opportunity not only to help these people, but to help the people they're connected to and help promote our movement. Because I'm of the opinion that right now our movement is fodder for other religious movements and the self-help movements in general. Hmm. They take our, you know, you hear, I had somebody reach out to me recently about Word of Faith preachers, some people they had heard, and they thought they were New Thought. And I was like, no, they're Word of Faith preachers, because they used to get like the Joel Osteens and
mm-hmm.
The T.D. Jakes and the, you know, it's a very popular person. I don't want to start naming names that would be appropriate. I already gave, but they're super popular and people know
sure.
about them. But they teach, oh, they teach faith, or they teach, you know, they're teaching New Thought. No, they're not. They're teaching aspects of what we teach because we're, mm-hmm. you know, we have some similarities in some things, but in other things, we're the polar opposite. I just think that it right now is a challenge, Reverend Shad, with, and I don't like using this word, but I think I just have to use it. The fear that ministry leaders have in offending the people by being authentically who they are.
Sure. And one of the opportunities that maybe they don't even recognize or could be recognized as you coming in and get a speaker is that you can do something with a congregation that the standing minister or senior minister in place can't necessarily do.
Right.
Because you're in some ways an outsider.
Correct.
So that creates, in a way, it creates a safety zone where a person can go, well, I can take this or leave this because this person's gone tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the leadership of this church. So it actually, and you've probably run into this, if you have a traveling minister come through and they say, hey, is there anything you'd like me to say to your congregation that you can't say? And you say, oh, right. can you give them the tithing talk? Like, they're sick of me. You know, it's like that type of thing.
Yeah.
Where it can be used as a real resource to say, hey, I think there's this soft spot in my congregation that I can't speak to necessarily in the way I'd like to because I'm here next week. And they see that as, this is the church saying this.
Right.
But a guest speaker can come in and say, look, I'm going to introduce some concepts. You can take it or leave it because I don't speak for the ministry.
Right.
I'm just speaking for these ideas. And what's helped me really recently is to really look at this spectrum of unity and even a spectrum of new thought. And if a ministry is clear about what it's trying to accomplish, it can land in different spots in this spectrum. And so the terms I'm going to use just for my own sake is, you know, the more universalist spectrum on one end, mm-hmm. and then the practical Christian side on the other end. And then you have all these ministries in between. Where do you land on that spectrum? And both can serve a purpose towards helping people understand what unity is. We're going to talk specifically about unity. You can be on the universalist side and be an open doorway for people that are possibly highly triggered by religion or Christianity or whatever it might be. And so your front door isn't really advertising, we're this Christian thing, we got this roots in Christianity, we got et cetera, et cetera. It's a softer entry point for people that might have been initially triggered by that and will stay away.
Right.
If you're clear, though, that this is what you do, you can use it as a soft entry point to start bringing them into the more practical side of our teaching, the film work teachings, these sort of things, as they're ready to move into that direction to connect to those roots of who we are. And if you're aware of that, then you have a system for moving people in that direction so you don't lose the connection to the roots, like you're talking about, like losing the language, losing our history, losing that connection. You can be clear about that and you'll understand where you land on that spectrum and you facilitate that process. And it actually works on the other end as well. You can have a unity church that sounds almost fundamentalist, very Bible-based, very Jesus-heavy talks and classes and everything else. That's a soft entry point for Christians that are expanding and looking for something a little bit more broad in understanding, and you help opening up their minds and moving them a little bit towards the middle so they start opening up to, you know what, there are many paths to God. I don't have to see other religions as bad or not working or against me, that they're just a different path. And so that both ends are kind of working towards the middle of this balanced place where we haven't lost our history, we haven't lost our roots, but we know when people are ready to connect with them based on where they are on the path. If a ministry is not clear about where they are in that process, then I think it might be confusing people. That might be confusing guest speakers who come in. They're saying, don't do this, don't do this. If they can say, look, do this, but just understand this is where my congregation is and this is where I'm trying to take them, you can go, okay, I need to do kind of a segue talk that talks about, gets you from here to here with some language that evolved through the talk to help you get there without just, you know, opening up and you're all sinners, you know, and okay, well, we're all out of here type of thing. Just so it's, for me, it's going, all right. As long as the ministry knows where it lands, it can be very effective in what it's doing. But it's when it doesn't know, then you sort of have this confusion that exists in the culture of the ministry itself.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, for those who do want to bring me in to speak, I do know how to adjust my sermons, by the way.
But, I figured.
Yeah. And one of the things that I do is I do take a look at the landscape. And how I adjust my lessons is I adjust it two ways. One, I think you just gave a great example. You know, the the more Christian-based side versus the more universalist language. Mm-hmm. Which one will I emphasize? Mm-hmm. But then there's the, what's their new thought capacity? Mm-hmm. Because, you know, if you start coming in with some of the terminology that we use and some of the teachings, and they're not there as a congregation, it's not something they're used to hearing. And, you know, and all of a sudden you start in on the Atom Smashing Power of Mind by Charles Fillmore, you're automatically just losing people.
Right. All people.
All people. So like their sermons I'll do at Christ Universal Temple that I would never do in the field. Mm-hmm. Because this congregation has been used to a certain type of language, a certain type of et cetera. And even then I have to be mindful. Now we're online. There are people who are watching us who might not have taken the classes and been around for a decade or longer. And now how do I shape that to make sure that it can feed the advanced person and it's an mm-hmm. entry point to a new person? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the dance that all ministries have to do at this point. So it's to have a net that's wide enough to feed and be an entry point for all who want to engage in that ministry.
It's part of the minister's job to challenge, you know, just to challenge the folks sitting there. And I think part of what I hear you might be saying is if a leader gets in a spot where they're afraid to challenge their congregation,
right,
then they might be stepping away from what is part of their duty. It's not just to make us all feel good that everything's okay. There's definitely a time and a place for that, depending on where in your life. There's also a place for, all right, it's now for me to challenge you again and to push you a little bit into that comfort zone, not so far that you're going to leave the ministry, but far enough that it's going to be spinning in your head the rest of that week. And you're going to process what you heard, and you're going to start questioning some things about what you thought about life and yourself. But I love that because it speaks a lot to what I've been running into as I'm out doing this workshop. I'm visiting ministries. The internal language we have at Unity, we have this really internal language that I'll catch myself doing as I'm speaking publicly, or I'll hear someone else doing as they're speaking publicly, that we just rattle off words like chemicalization or atom mm-hmm. consciousness or these different things. And my wife, who was raised Southern Baptist, will just say, that doesn't mean anything to anybody but you. You realize that, right? And I go, right. I gotta define this if I'm gonna use it. Gotta get my internal language to be accessible to new people, mm-hmm. or else I've excluded them in the conversation.
Yes, yes. I call it define and expound. Mm-hmm. You know, many years ago, just working with people, but I started very early. You were raised in it. I wasn't raised in it. But by the time I was teaching New Thought, I was 24. Mm-hmm. Trained to teach it, right. But the first people I had to talk to were family members and buddies. Now I'm on mm-hmm. the south side of Chicago at the park playing basketball, sitting on the bench between games. What are you doing? Well, I'm studying. And now my brain is saying, how do I explain this to people who have no context?
Right.
So it was like, okay, so before I tell you what I'm doing, let me define it first.
Right.
And then it was actually a good skill to develop because it's helped me now over the last 30 years.
Yeah, absolutely. It's how do I talk about this without sounding like I've lost my marbles?
Right.
And put it in some bridging terminology to something that you're going to understand that isn't offensive and isn't so off the wall that puts me in the lost marbles category. And yes. We've all played that game as ministers, as Unity teachers, and as Unity congregants, that you go out mm-hmm. and really finding the commonology or common place that we can walk on. And I've had this process, the wonderful tool for me with my wife's family. They're all Southern Baptists. And going to the gatherings, and originally I was thinking, I'm trying to explain Unity to them. And it's just not going to happen this way.
Right.
And then I really realized I basically agree with everything they're saying, metaphysically interpreted in my own mind. Mm-hmm. And I can talk to them in their language because I've read the Bible, I've studied it, I've got that language, I kind of know where they're coming from. And ultimately, we're all coming from the heart. We're trying to connect with love. And they're looking at it from a different perspective, and that's fine. And I don't have to correct that perspective. It's really learning in that process. I can just join you in the conversation. You talk about the love of Jesus, and I can talk about the love of Jesus, and you can talk about salvation. I can talk about salvation, and I don't have to be trying to bring you to unity. I can just use the internal part of my mind to sort of unitize it, put the metaphysics on it, and I'm still having the same conversation we're having, understanding that you're just coming at it from a different perspective.
You know, it's just really interesting. I just had a conversation with one of my cousins from who lives in California. He's a Baptist minister. He grew up with my dad, and he was just talking to me about, you know, he's very proud of the work that I do in ministry, and I'm very proud of him. And one of the things that he said to me as I was at my auntie's house visiting him was, he said, you know, we didn't understand what Reverend Coleman was trying to do all those years ago when he was still living here.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, she was trying to make sure everybody succeeded in her ministry. And she was only trying to tell people, if you really change your thinking, you can change your life. Now, this is a Baptist minister saying this.
Right. But
when he was younger and all of the, you know, the arrows were coming at her because she had this big church and she was teaching this alternative spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the ministers in the city just couldn't accept it. Besides the fact that she was a woman, on top of that, for some of them, that was disqualifying in and of itself.
Right.
And it was just refreshing to hear him say, basically, yeah, we just didn't get it. But now I understand what she was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more people have an opportunity to do that, but I think in some small way, my relationship with him has helped him understand what she was doing. Because we'll sit down and talk, or I'll send him a video. Hey, check out my sermon, because he's an exceptional preacher. I'm like, hey, check out my sermon. You know, I want him to be able to see it. I want him to be able to pull, and he can see that I'm honoring and respecting what he honors and respects. I'm just utilizing it differently.
Right. And I think it for him to see that you're not trying to change him either.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys can honor each other in your spaces, and you're not trying to tell him he's wrong. You're not trying to change. Right. You're not trying to say what I've got is right.
Right.
That's, I think, you know, initially when we come up each other against each other in religion or faith, the assumption is that you're coming here to tell me I'm wrong, or you're coming here to change me or to prove something to me. And if you can shift that dynamic to say, I'm just here to share space with you and honor that you've got a different perspective than I have, and I don't think we're going to say either one of us is right or wrong, you slowly see people kind of, so that wall starts to come down and go, okay, so this is a safer environment. You're not trying to prove something. You're like, no, I've got something I found that works for me. You got something that found that works for you. That isn't always a case. Of course, there's the people that are going to push and try to say you're wrong and justify that. I'm going to put my head in the sand, act like that doesn't happen. But I've had enough experiences that once you break down that I'm not here to try to prove or debate something with you, people open up a lot more and look at the commonalities and they go, okay, I kind of get where you're coming from.
Yeah. And, you know, when people come to me and they have issues with their family members, friends, et cetera, I always tell people, lead with love. You don't have to take on anybody's judgment. You don't have to take anybody's mistreatment either.
Mm-hmm.
Lead with love. And you take the meaning away from them, because sometimes they're reaching out to you because they're really afraid that something wrong is going to happen to you if that's the context of their religious beliefs. So even when they're coming to you with, you got to join my church, you got to get baptized or whatever the religious equivalent is, sometimes it's based upon the fact that, like many family members, they're concerned about you.
Right.
And the best way you can show them is by living the truth that you understand.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can remember telling a friend who had an issue with same-sex marriage. A woman had reached out to me and she was like, well, my family's Pentecostal, and they called me and they said, you're about to do the final sin. And, and it was, you know, they gave a barrage of scriptures. And she said, what do you have to say about it? And I said to her, Reverend Shad, so what? And what it shocked her. And what I was just trying to get across to her was this. You have a right to live from your authentic self. You have a right to love who you choose to love. And I get that some people might not agree with that. But here's the thing. You don't have to be in opposition to them. They don't have to be in opposition to you. You just have to live your life authentically and show them what this love looks like. You don't have to prove anything to them, but just show up authentically. And now it's a non-issue. Her and her wife, they get along with the people. It's not an issue. But they hadn't seen it before. So people, human beings have a tendency to react to things that are outside their norms, not maybe the norm, but we have a tendency to act up when it's outside of our norms. We do need to take a quick break. It's time. So when we come back, couple of things. One, I want to make sure that people know how to get in contact with you and your organization that you lead. And two, let's drill down on a few things about, let's see if we can get through the questions.
Okay.
There. So we'll be right back with Truth Transform. Welcome back to Truth Transformed. My guest today, yet again, is Reverend Shad Groverland, the CEO of Unity Worldwide Ministries. And we're talking about, unity and unity's place in the larger religious and spiritual context of the world. And Reverend Shad, before we go forward, because we've covered so much stuff that I want to make sure that people know how to, one, get in contact with you, two, how to get in contact with Unity Worldwide Ministries, and three, how do they find a Unity church in their area?
All of those are sort of wrapped up in one solution. Our website is unityuwm.org. So just unityuwm.org. We've got a Find a Unity Community link on there. You actually can go and it'll give you a map of the world and show you where our Unity ministries are around the world. You can find one near you and click on it and give you the information about that ministry. And my contact, you can find contact information on there, all about Unity Worldwide Ministries. And then our primary website for a lot of more general information is just unity.org, which will have more about the books and publishing and different aspects of Unique Engage, which includes our Unity Village property here that I'm sitting on the side of right now, just a gorgeous property, just kind of our Unity home and all that. But you can start at unityuwm.org. That's going to get you pretty much what you need.
All right. Well, I will say, just for the record, that Unity is the mecca of our movement. And anybody that's loosely associated with studying anything, not just in Unity, but within the larger New Thought world, needs to at least one time go visit Unity Village. It's hard to explain until you're there.
Well, you got the energy here on site. Reverend Jim Blake, CEO of Unity World Headquarters, who manages the property, has done a phenomenal job with the property. Just looks incredible. Brand new labyrinth. Just beautiful things happening here. So, yeah, I mean, it's one of the places where you cross the gate, you come out of the property, and you feel just a shift. There's just a beautiful energy happening here with the fountains and wildlife.
Yes, I've been there many times, and obviously you're there all the time.
Yes.
I absolutely adore the place. I'll be back soon. All right. So let's get to some more questions. How can Unity and New Thought Ministries expand and impact more people?
It's really been my focus the last 3.5 years in this position since I got it, was to get us clear about where we fit in this space, where we fit in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think from the parent organizations, we get up high to the parent organizations of New Thought, down to the ministry level itself, down to a single prayer group that might be getting together. It's about understanding who you are and what you do well, so you can communicate that to the world. What we so often find, just like in our personal lives, we gather a lot of clutter. And we get a lot of, we waste a lot of time on our clutter, managing our clutter and trying to manage our debt of clutter that sits in our lives. When we really scale down and we get clear about in our personal lives, who we are and who we're meant to be in this lifetime, we can be very effective now in what we're trying to accomplish. And it gives us something to say yes, a way to say yes, and a way to say no to the different things that come to our lives. Well, this is the same opportunity I believe we have in Unity and New Thought, is to get really clear and hyper-focused about who we are, what we're doing, who it's for, so that we can start communicating clearly to the world that statement. Because people, and more I run into people, are looking for something definable, something they can relate to and they understand. When it's more vague and undescribable, it's hard for them to engage with it, and it's hard for them to find it. We're looking for very specific things when we hop online, looking for a spiritual group or a community or a church, whatever it might be. We're looking for specific things. And when we shop a website, we're also looking for specific words and specific imagery and the type of things that we're going to have an affinity with. Because we come from tribes, you know, we're tribal people. We look for where's our tribe, where's our village, where's our community of like-minded individuals. So if we're too vague, people can't find that. They can't find us. So right. That, I believe, leads to us being the best kept secret, you know, in the world over and over again. People just can't find us. Well, a secret becomes the best kept secret when nobody's talking about it. Mm-hmm. A secret's no longer a secret when everyone's talking about it. We want people talking about Unity. We want a local community talking about the ministry that's there to other people. But if they can't describe what it is, they're not clear on what its theology is or what it believes. They're not really sure who it's for or what it was designed to do. They can't describe it to other people. And word of mouth, as we know, is still the best form of advertising. Absolutely. And if someone can't describe what's going on there, then it's a losing battle to try to get people to know you are there. So really drilling down to getting focused on exactly why is my ministry there? Who is it designed to serve? What do we do really well? And then broadcast that to the world. That's what we do. Then you can advertise to those people. You can advertise that theology, that belief system, whatever that is. So those people looking for you go, oh, there it is. It's just down the street from my house, or it's this online group, I found it. But if it's not specific enough, then it just disappears in the fray of everything else that's being advertised and marketed.
Yeah, and we're in a world of information overload, and I'm a big believer. If you can't put it on a T-shirt, it's too long. you know, like we literally have to be able to explain to people in really quick and simple ways. And I think this is a limitation, actually, of our movement, to be honest, that when people say, well, what is it? We give them vague definitions, you know, that, you know, I within my own movement, one of the debates I have with the ministers in my movement, loving debate, by the way, is the definitions are too generalized. You know, like, okay, so if a person says, what is New Thought? And what's it bothers me because Reverend Shad, I actually created my own definition and then I didn't use it for a while because it was just what I was using. And I misplaced the notes and I cannot recall exactly how I put it together. I have boxes of notes and notebooks and whatever, and I just wrote it on something. And I was teaching a seminar one day and I said, I'll come back to this because I want to present this to the larger movement. And I got an opportunity to do it. And it still bothers me to this day. I've been looking for it for years, but I just have so much material. But I do think that it's important for us to be able to define what it is that we do. You know, one of the things that I remember when I first heard Reverend Coleman, who was, again, trained and ordained in Unity, she would tell people, Christ Universal Temple teaches people how to live better lives. I was, okay, I want a better life. So, like, wait a minute, this ain't just praying me into the by and by. This isn't, you know, whatever the version of what it is. You're going to teach me how to live a better life? Now, everybody doesn't want that. And that might sound funny to us from our context, but everybody doesn't want that. I literally had a friend of mine send one of her friends, my last sermon at CUT, and they said, well, this guy talking was very inspiring, but I like people to beat me up with the Bible. When I got that message, I was like, beat you up with the Bible? They want the sin, the God's wrath, and what all of that type of stuff that we don't do. Mm-hmm. So automatically, our movement isn't for that guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, too.
Absolutely.
You know, like, if you need to hear that for you to act right, then God be the glory.
Right. And what I love is throughout Unity, throughout New Thought, there are these different flavors.
Right.
And I think there's an opportunity there to learn about the different flavors that are out there. Yeah. So we can actually help steer people to where they might resonate most. I know that I've gone through ministries in a time, even in my own ministry, where you're like, oh, I need to keep everyone here. I got to shift my message to keep people here. I don't want them going to that place or that place. You know, we need the income. Yeah. We need the bodies in the room. But that's not a prosperity mindset, for sure. It's not an abundance mindset. It's not a healthy mindset, because it may not be what's best for those individuals.
Right.
We had a better understanding of the faith community around us. We could really say, you know what, you may be a better fit here. You may be a better fit here. Unity, I think, is a great landing space, and I hope you find your home here. But if it's not resonating with you, like you said, if you're looking for hell, fire, and brimstone and sin, great. That's probably down the street at XYZ, but that's not really what we do here. And we're going to honor that and bless you. And I might even walk you down there and introduce you to the minister if I know them well enough. You know, if we could have that type of relationship where there wasn't this turf warfare for congregants, but we really just were this greater community with different perspectives, I think there'd be people honoring more authenticity in who we are, that we're not just trying to get you through the door to get to your wallet. We're really concerned about your spiritual growth, which means we're authentic enough to even recommend a place that might be a better fit for you.
Yes. Now, I wasn't planning on asking this question, but your last answer just brought it up.
All right.
So.
Oh, no. You're doing a breath before this.
Yeah, it's a breath, because I don't want anybody to be offended, because I've been, I love this movement just like you. One of the things that I have with some of my friends in the New Thought ministry, the conversation is, New Thought, Unity, UFBL, Centers for Spiritual Living, Divine Science, we talk the prosperity talk. But then when we start looking at the application of it in our ministries, and it's not always matching up. Like you just said, the fear conversation.
Mm-hmm.
You start talking about prosperity and what that looks like. And in and of itself, that's a loaded term, because of the prosperity gospel that's happening, Pentecostal movements and things of that nature, where what does prosperity mean to us now? How does that show up, not just individually as congregants, but how does that show up in what a ministry does and how a ministry decides what it's going to do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you bumping into the prosperity conversation as you're out in the field?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a human condition. So you can't even say it's specific to Unity or New Thought, or it's a problem with ministries. It's a human condition that if there's a concern, we start to clam up. We start to hold tighter to the resources we currently have in our hands. And we sort of batten down the hatches. In whatever scale that might be happening, depending on whatever challenge you're facing. So ministry comes out of COVID. They've experienced possibly a loss in income, loss in attendance, loss in faith, people having a crisis of faith, all these different concerns coming to front. And they're not even consciously, they could be subconsciously battening down the hatches, which, you know, in some instances is the right and perfect thing to do. But when you're thinking about prosperity and abundance and flow, you want to be opening it up. You want to be opening up things to allow them to flow. And we're clamping down. And it's like, all right, I got to hold on to this small group of people I have. And I can't shake the boat at all. I can't try to say anything that might bother them. Because if one person leaves, we could be ruined.
Right.
And then your speaking style is different. Then the way you do outreach is different. If it's all based on fear and I don't want to offend and I don't want to do XYZ, then you're shifting the core of who you are. And you may not realize it until 5 years later, you may never realize you're totally on a different track than you were when you rested in this place of, there's a flow happening. I'm here to align with that flow. It's going to sometimes look like it's for me. It's going to sometimes look like it might be against me, but it doesn't shift who I am in relation to this flow. Then you're sort of in line with the prosperity as it was taught by our founders, and abundance as we understand it in the universe, that abundance isn't an infinite supply that's always in my hands. Abundance is an infinite flow that I can step into and be in alignment with. And so, yeah, you do see that. And it's not a judgment on people in that condition, because we are all in that condition. It is the human condition.
Right.
But it's really, I think, what you're talking about, it's healthy to have that conversation so that in a way we can call each other up and say, let me check in with you. How are you doing? Seems like you're talking a lot of fear, a lot of lack, a lot of doubt. Or are you having that conversation with a board? You go into a board meeting and they're down in the finances and they're down in this and they're down in that. Let's open up this conversation about what we believe about abundance, what we believe about prosperity, what are our principles, how do they apply here? So we don't knock ourselves off course.
Right.
We always write ourselves back to our principles so that we don't lose the ship.
Yeah, and face facts with truth. We're not telling people don't look at the budget line, don't pay attention. We're not telling people to spend money that they don't have by no stretch of imagination. It's our jobs to be wise stewards of the people's resources. And the mindset that we have when we do anything matters. And I think this is a larger conversation, because especially if people are in a area that's less affluent, or they're in people who have congregations that are older, and they're dealing with extremely fixed incomes.
Right.
And, you know, and fear of the unknown. They're not working. They have other dynamics. They're downsizing. It's a lot of conversations that I just think the more we're open about having, the better it is for people. Now, we only got about 4 minutes left. I have two quick questions I want to ask you. One is, can you tell the people a little bit about the workshop that you go around? You do it not only in Unity churches, but in Uthar churches in general. The workshop that you do. And the second one will be really quickly, the legacy of the spiritual healing movement in Unity and why that's important.
Sure. So the workshop's called the Power of Focus Ministry. It's a two-part workshop where we do the workshop, and then there's an implementation process to actually implement the workshop, which is another couple of day process. And really it's around what we've talked about a bit, about finding exactly what your purpose is in ministry, getting very clear and focused on what you do well, why you're there, who you're doing ministry for, so you can start to release the things that aren't serving you. You start to clarify a lot of the confusion that might have been in your ministry, a lot of the clutter that might be floating around, so the ministry can more effectively use its resources, financial, energetic, volunteer, staff resources, and focus them on the things that are going to help them thrive and grow. So they're not so scattered on all the things that we find just sort of sneaking through the doors of a ministry over time. And now we're doing 10 different classes. We're doing all these different events, and none of them are quite doing that well. So it's really focusing down opportunity to do that process. And it's been very powerful, very, very fun to go do it. Did it 24 times last year, traveling around doing that last year. And we've done it a few times this year. So the healing ministry of Myrtle Fillmore, I really believe it's a time to highlight and celebrate that again in Unity and really bring it back to the surface and do it in a way that's approachable and accessible. I think historically we found that sometimes when we've talked about our healing work, it's sounded out of touch and inaccessible, like magical thinking.
Yeah.
When we put it in the context of this is what's possible, this is what we can aspire towards, then it's more approachable that there is, again, a spectrum of how we can approach healing, that you're not going to say an affirmation tomorrow that ailment's going to be gone. That's not how this works. Myrtle was working this healing process for 2 years before she got results on her tuberculosis. So how we present it is crucial in that we're not scaring people away or shaming what their current healing practice is, but to honor that this is a spectrum of healing on the path to mind over body, and that there's a process to get to where Myrtle and Charles and other faith and mind healers have arrived at. We're not expecting to be here tomorrow with results. and really honoring where you are right now, exactly where you should be on your journey, because this is the beginning of the journey of healing. So in that, but I think the world is so craving healing, mental healing, physical healing, spiritual healing, societal healing, governmental healing. It's craving healing, and we have these incredible tools for healing. I think it's really a call for us to bring those back out, to really celebrate Myrtle's story and Charles's story and all the great healers that came after them, because people are looking for that. That's one of those beacons of light that can resonate to a community that we have tools to help you get through this difficult process you're experiencing called life, like you're talking about with, you know, Johnny Coleman's message, Reverend Dr. Johnny Coleman, that this, we're going to improve your life. We're going to help you have a better life. But being realistic about where that is on the spectrum of where you are right now,
yes,
and the potential of, hey, Jesus rose people from the dead. He walked on water. He didn't do that his first day on the planet. There was a process for him to get there, right?
Yes. So yeah, I love that. And, you know, we're going to have to wrap up, but the spiritual healing part is very important to me. As you know, I've shared this to you before about the healing of almost dying from asthma when I was 20 years old and the intense process I went through to get a spiritual healing. I mean, it wasn't 2-3 days. It was all day, every day, immersion for months. Right. And then the test came back. Oh, everything is fine. And I've never had a relapse in 31 years now.
That's awesome.
An asthma attack. So it's important to me that that message never gets lost, because I think that without it, unity and the New Thought movement loses its teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds great. It can give people an emotional, feel good feeling, but the power of the message is you can heal your life, whether it's physically, financially, relationally, socially, whatever, all the things that you just mentioned. There's a power in this message, and there are communities. And I think this is what's most important about what we're doing. There are communities that can support you doing it. You don't have to do it by yourself. This is something that I think just have to emphasize. There's strength in community.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that you're among a group of people that when you say, I'm going to work on this ailment with my mind, they don't, you know, cart you off to the loony bin. They go, I hear you. I'll pray with you. I'll visualize with you. I'll work with you on this. That's a powerful experience, be surrounded by like-minded individuals that aren't naysaying your process and your practice. They're actually lifting it up and supporting it.
Yeah. So do you have 2 minutes?
Sure.
2 minutes.
So it's going to cost you, but I got them.
Okay. All right. Put it on my bill. I think what you just said was really important. Being a 20-year-old who decided that I was going to go all in on the spiritual healing part, you know, after I knew I was healed and I was on 2 inhalers and pills.
Mm.
And I can remember having the conversation with my mother, Mom, I know I'm healed and I'm approved that this truth works, or I'm not going to be here. I literally said that to her, threw the medicine in the garbage. I'm not telling anybody to throw their medicine away. Please hear that. This is where I was. This was my journey. Probably 20 years later, after my mother was deceased, one of the leaders here, one of my spiritual mothers, said to me, do you realize what your mother was going through when you had that conversation? I never looked at it from my perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And what came to me in the midst of the conversation was, the one person in the world that could have talked me out of was her.
Right.
Though, and she never brought it up again. She stood with me, her baby, 20-year-old baby, and said, I stand with what you're doing. And if she'd have did the mama thing, I'd have got that medicine out the garbage.
Yeah. You wouldn't have had the willpower to move against that.
I wouldn't have moved against my mother.
And it reminds me, growing up, my mom used to say, if you ever get big illness, something is big happening in your body, your life, she'd say, go find a cabin, get away from everybody you know, get your Unity books, do your work. It's too hard to fight the naysayers in your life. You're going to say, oh my goodness, go get the scan, go get that, go to the, oh no, you're going to get, She said, get out of that. Get your head clean. Get it straight. Just work on your healing. And surround yourself with people that believe and understand what you're doing.
Yes, yes. And for that, it made me more grateful for the process and more grateful for the mother that I had for those years, because she could have just said no.
Mm-hmm.
And that would have been, okay, I'm not going to disappoint my mom. I'm not going to scare my mother. You know, I have to, let me just do this stuff that the people are saying I'm supposed to do, versus standing in my conviction, which I believe enhanced my spiritual growth, accelerated my spiritual growth. So I just wanted to share that, because being in a community of people that can stand with you in truth makes all the difference in the world. Because yes, it's hard to fight against all of the other conversations, including your own inner conversation.
Oh, yeah.
You already got to push through for the breakthrough.
There's already plenty of that.
Yeah. So, you know, I got enough negative stuff going on. I don't need somebody else telling me I can't do it.
Right.
So, you know, so, but anyway, I just wanted to share that as an
encapsulation
that you were sharing, because I already loved my mom dearly. But once I had that context, it made me adore her even at a higher level. Like, man, the one person that could have stopped me was her.
That's awesome.
She stood with me.
Beautiful faith. Faith in you, faith in the process. It's awesome.
Yes. She believed. And, you know, and before she passed, she told me, the one thing I'd never do is worry about you. I know you will be okay. And I live with that every day, because it's like, it's the gift. Supportive community. And some people will never get that from their families and friends. They don't have the upbringing in the communities. But if you show up at a Unity Church, a New Thought Church, whatever, we're not saying we're perfect. People are people. We're not walking on water.
Mm-hmm.
But we can be a space that can be a part of your growth. So go on that Unity Worldwide Ministries website, find a place where you can find a supportive community, whether in person or online, but find a community that can be a part of your transformation. So, Reverend Shad, I really appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule. I know we've been wrestling trying to get this on the calendar for months.
We sure have.
Between both of our calendars trying to match up. So just thank you so much. You know, as you need me, you know, I'm coming. You can call. So just let's continue to just do what we do.
Hey, so, I appreciate you. Thanks for the invite. It's always a blast. And likewise, if you need anything, let me know.
All right. So listeners, I'll be with you next week with True Transforms. God bless.